Out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's episode, we have a very special interview with John Citroni. And John was a legendary bodybuilder from the 1960s, 1970s, and he went on to compete in the Masters division in the NABBA Mr. Universe and the NABBA World Championships. Incredible career, and John still looks amazing today. He's going to be 79 years old this year. I wrote down some of the titles that John had. He won the Mr. Britain title, which is a very prestigious title, of course, in 1966. And then he competed in the NABBA Universe, and he won his class in 1966, 1967. And then he competed in the Pro NABBA Universe in 1968 and 69, and he won his class there as well. So he got to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, in 1966 and 67, when Arnold was first in the contest. And he was competing against Arnold. In 1968, they went head-to-head against each other, the short class and the tall class. And John thought he might have had an advantage that year. So John took a few years off, and then when he came back, he was competing in the Masters division, first over 40 and then over 50. And he won the Masters division at the NABBA Universe five times, and the World Championships he won six times. So John is really a legend. And I interviewed John a few years ago, but I wanted to have him back on the show just to find out his secrets for looking so good at 79 years old. So we got John Citroni from England coming up in a minute. You guys are really going to love this interview. All right. In other news, we did have another unfortunate death just this last week. Boston Lloyd, who was the son of John Lloyd, and John was a great bodybuilder in the 1980s. He took second to Gary Stridham at the 1984 MPC USA in the heavyweight class. And we had John on the show a few years ago. But his son, Boston, made a name for himself in the bodybuilding world, not from competitions, but for his views on steroid use. Boston was very liberal with his steroid use. He took a lot of steroids, especially when he was younger. And he talked about it on social media and on YouTube and all the other interviews he gave. He was on Dave Palumbo's show, RX Muscle, a lot. And was non-apologetic for all the amounts of drugs that he took. He took huge amounts of drugs. And Boston died of a heart attack just last week, 29 years old. He was married. He had a young daughter. What a shame. I got a chance to know Boston a few times, even though obviously we had very different views. I believe in natural bodybuilding, and Boston believed in taking as many drugs as possible. But he was a great guy, great kid. And one thing I really admired about him was his honesty. He was so honest about everything, about his opinions on other people in the industry, about drug use, about everything, about judging decisions. And you don't find that too much in any industry, especially in the fitness industry. Everybody says, you know, the politically correct thing and what they want, what they think everybody wants to hear. And it's not too often you run across someone like Boston who is absolutely unafraid to speak his mind. And I will miss that about him for sure. He was a nice kid, and I really liked talking to him. And I didn't know him too well, but I did know him on occasion. And he was always very respectful and very nice when he met me. And, man, 29 years old, we're going to miss him. It's way too young to go. But he did live that lifestyle. And he had some real kidney issues the last few years. His kidneys were failing him. And I think from what I heard, that might have somehow been related to the heart attack. So rest in peace, Boston Lloyd. Way too young, 29 years old. And I feel bad for his wife and his daughter, of course. All right. Another better news. Jerry Branum, our good friend from the show, had a birthday on February 26th, just a couple of days ago. So happy birthday to Jerry. Jerry is a Pisces like me. No wonder we get along so well. Happy birthday to Jerry. I hope you had a good birthday out there in California. And I hope you got a chance to celebrate. I will be heading out toward the Arnold Classic this weekend. I'm leaving on Thursday. And I'll probably check out the amateur Arnold events on Thursday. And then Friday and Saturday is the big show. They're going to have the pre-judging for half of the events on Friday. And then the finals will be that night. And I believe on the finals that night, I believe they're going to have the pre-judging for the men's open. And not too many competitors, only 9 competitors. They had a lot of dropouts. Cedric McMillan just dropped out last week. And I always love Cedric's physique, but he's been having some health issues too. Seems like, you know, me and Jerry have talked on the show a lot. A lot of these guys are having health problems now, and it's really getting scary. I wonder where it's going to go. But anyways, Brandon Curry, who is a former Arnold Classic champion, as well as a former Mr. Olympia champion in 2019. Brandon has taken second in the Mr. Olympia the last 2 years. He took a really close second last year to Big Ramy. And I thought he had Big Ramy beat, at least at the prejudging. But Big Ramy improved the next day, and he was able to hold on to his title. So Brandon is going in the Arnold Classic, and he is definitely the heavy favorite. And from the pictures I've seen, he looks really, really good. He looks really big. And Brandon's got that great shape because he's got the smaller waist and the great wide shoulders and big lats. So a very good shape for bodybuilding, even in this age of mass monsters. And he's definitely the heavy favorite to win the show. And there's some other young guys coming up, like Brett Wilkin, who is a new pro. I think he competed last year in his first pro show, and he is really putting on the size quickly and still a pretty young guy, I think. So he's going to be up there. And who else? Steve Williams just dropped out as well. I guess he's got COVID. And then William Bonac, who is also a former Arnold Classic champion, he will be coming back as well. And William's getting a little bit older, so we don't know what's going to happen with him. So anyways, I will be out there and I will be covering the show. So I will be doing the wrap ups with Chris Aceto. So if you are interested in the Arnold Classic at all, check out YouTube this weekend and you'll see me and Chris report on the show on both Friday and Saturday. I imagine we're going to be doing videos after the prejudging and the evening show for both days. And then I'll be writing articles for Digital Muscle about the contest. So if you're out there, I will also be at the expo working the Pro Physique booth. That's the company I'm working for doing online training. So if you're in the expo on Saturday or Sunday, I think I'll be there like later in the day, like 4 to 6 after the prejudging's over and before the finals start. So if you're in the area, check that out and come over and say hi to me. All right. I think that's all I got. And then at the end of our podcast, as I always do, I'm going to read a couple articles. The one I'm going to read about John Cetrone comes from Bill Pearl's great volume, Legends of the Iron Game. I don't know if I think I mentioned this before on the show. Bill published 3 volumes, and he profiles all the significant bodybuilders from the very beginning of the sport all the way through the golden age. So if you ever get a chance to get a hold of this volume set, it's a beautifully done set, and I'm glad I bought it when it came out. So it's called Legends of the Iron Game, written by Bill Pearl. And it's 3 volumes, and they have John Cetrone featured in chapter 5 of the 3rd volume. So I'm going to read that. And because that's a short article, I'm going to follow that up with an article about Rich Gaspari, who was the first Arnold Classic winner way back in 1989. And I was looking for the contest report of the 1989 Arnold Classic, but I could not find it in Flex Magazine. But I did find the issue after that, which was the July 1989 issue of Flex Magazine. And it's called The Wisdom of Gaspari. And it is a question and answer interview with Rich, where he talks about his training and his diet and winning the first Arnold Classic in 1989. So hopefully you guys will like that. So stick around after our interview with John Cetrone, and I will read those 2 articles. And what else? I got some more videos going up on YouTube too. So if you follow me on YouTube, check that out. And I did not get any emails this week. So if you guys want to email me, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I did a great interview with Charles Gaines last week. I don't know if you guys heard it on the podcast, and I really enjoyed that. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to that. That was one of my favorite interviews so far this year. So I think it's probably one of my favorite interviews at the end of the year as well, because I love talking to Charles. All right, guys. So that's all I got for our intro. Here is our interview with the great legend, John Cetrone from England. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with me today, Mr. John Cetrone from, where are you from? Where are you at now, John? You're from England originally, but where are you at now, in Spain?
No, I'm in England.
Oh, you're in England. Okay, yeah, all right, great. All right, I want to go over your bodybuilding career, but before we do that, I want to talk to you about today, because you look amazing, and every time I see pictures of you on Facebook, you're always in fantastic shape. How old are you now, John?
I'll be 79 next month.
79 next month. Okay.
79 in May. Yes.
In May. Okay. Gotcha. All right. So what's your routine like now? Because I'll talk to some older bodybuilders and stuff, and I want to find out like what they're doing now to work out. How many days a week do you work out?
I work out, well, almost every day.
Wow.
I do one body part a day, and I just, if it's chest today, arm tomorrow, back okay. the next day, legs the next day, for instance, in a circle.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So I'm doing a body part every 5 days.
Now, how do you work out when you work out, John? Do you go heavy again? Like, I remember you used to be really strong, so yeah. you were probably training heavy when you were younger, right?
Right. And I would still say I'm training heavy, but that heavy is nothing like the heavy that used to be, but it's still as heavy as I can handle.
Really? Okay.
So I'm still training, you know, as heavy as I can handle.
Okay.
Which is not that heavy these days.
Yeah.
yeah.
But you're not like one of these, like a lot of older guys when they get, you know, bodybuilders, when they get older, they say, I'm just going to train light, and they just go with the lightweights. But you don't do that.
Not really, no. No, I still work out, you know, hard. And for about half an hour would be maximum time I spend in the gym.
Only half hour, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So how about your diet? What's your diet like?
I just generally stick to a reasonably high protein diet. I take a lot of fruit and vegetables.
Okay.
And just a general healthy diet.
Okay. All right. How many meals a day?
I lean towards protein and lower carbohydrates.
Okay.
Yeah, I lean towards that way.
How many meals a day are you eating, John?
Probably two.
Two? Okay. Yeah. Two meals a day. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I can stagger them. Sometimes I can go most of the day on just one meal, but otherwise small snacks.
Okay.
But I don't eat a lot now. I can't take in a lot of food anymore.
Really? So, okay. Yeah. When did that change? What age did that change, Pat?
Oh, yeah, probably 4 or 5 years ago. That my food intake gets less. So as I get older.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is enough. I still feel fit and healthy with it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you still look lean. Every picture I see, you got your tank top on, you look really lean still.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So what's your weight now, John?
I'm 78 kilos yesterday.
Okay.
So you'll have to convert that.
Yeah. And how about when you were competing? What was your weight?
Well, my top weight was around 90 kilos.
Okay.
That was my biggest weight.
Okay. Okay. How do you feel like as you've gotten older? With your exercise and everything, has there been any changes?
Well, I change my routine all the time, really, and then swing back to the normal multiple sets. You know, sometimes I'll go try the low sets again, one or two sets.
Okay.
Very slow movement, and that now I'm just back to regular sets, doing about 10, 15 sets on a body part.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right. So let's go to the beginning, John. Let's start when you very first started working out. What got you into working out? What made you want to start lifting weights?
I don't know. I was about 14 at the time when I went down to one of the local youth clubs. And, of course, there was weights lying about the place. Mm-hmm. And I'd never seen bodybuilding magazines. I heard of bodybuilding at all at that stage. I was just a youth going to a youth club.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was weights around. And I was watching the guys lifting weights. And it was really Olympic lifting at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, one of the instructors asked, would you fancy coming down and having a go? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And he took us on and started teaching us Olympic lifting.
Okay.
So I started on the Olympic lifting side. And of course, I became good at it. And then just went from that to bodybuilding.
Okay. Yeah. Did you find it?
So you had pretty... bodybuilding. By the time I was about 15, I'd become, keen on trying to build a bit of muscle.
Okay. Did you think you had good genetics for strength and for size?
I never heard of genetics at that time.
Yeah.
But then when we started training fairly seriously, by the time I was around 16, I couldn't understand why my training partners weren't keeping up with us.
Yeah.
I was making gains that they weren't.
Yeah.
So I couldn't understand that part. And my bench presses and me lifting was flying up. You know, I was by the time I was 17, you know, I'm doing 400-pound bench presses. And
no kidding. Wow.
50-pound squats and what have you. Yeah.
Wow.
And training partners were nowhere near.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you just figure out, well, I couldn't, I just thought, well, there mustn't be training the way I am, but you know,
yeah,
that was how it was, yeah.
Wow.
And of course, I was keen at judo at that time.
Oh, really? Okay.
At the time, I was 17. Well, I was fighting someone younger man there in a judo contest. Mm-hmm. And of course, me judo thing got pulled off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was in bearskin chest. And of course, somebody after the contest, somebody came up to us and says, have you ever thought about entering a bodybuilding contest?
Mm-hmm.
And I says, no, what's a bodybuilding contest? I mean, we're talking about 1958, see if you know.
58, okay.
Yeah, around about that. And he says, look, there's a competition down in Sunderland at the weekend. Go down and have a look at it. Just go and watch it.
Yeah.
He says, once you watch it, I'll guarantee you want to enter it. He says, because just looking at you, you're ready to compete.
Yeah.
I says, all right, okay. So I went down, saw the competition, and I thought, oh, well, yes, yeah, maybe I'll try that.
Mm.
So I'm 17, and the local Mr. North Britain is coming up at the time, the junior Mr. North Britain.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, well, I've entered it. So I entered the contest. And, of course, Oscar Heidenstam was the main man. And I won the contest easily.
Hmm.
It wasn't even close. It was easy.
Yeah.
I won the contest. And Oscar said, you're the best junior we've got in the country at the moment. He said, when you come down to London, I think you might just be able to take the title.
Wow.
I've never even been at a show at this time.
Yeah, you never even saw one.
So anyway, I went down to London for the final, and it was held with the Miss Universe contest.
Oh, okay.
So that's when I went in and saw the Mr. Universe competitors, and I was just floored right over.
Yeah, that was 58, John?
Seeing those physiques like that.
Was that 1958?
And anyway, there was a big lineup. I ended and I got second. I was second to the previous year's winner.
Wow.
Paul Nash. And of course, the following year I went down and won easy. And so now I'm in third contest. I'm junior Mr. Britain. At that time, it was all autographs. And,
right.
Was autograph hunters then, rather than their camera jobs.
Yeah. And, so you won the junior Mr. Britain, and then you got second in the universe.
No, I won the junior Mr. Britain, and then after that, I'm back on doing a bit of powerlifting again.
Okay.
So the national powerlifting championship starts coming on, and I entered the powerlifting championships. By the time, at that time, I'd come on at 19. I ended that and I broke two British records at the time. So it was a 401-pound bench press. A 401-pound bench press and a 500-pound squat at that time. And I was weighing about 12 stones. I can't remember exactly now. Just a small guy. So I was the first 400-pound official bench press in England.
Wow, no kidding.
In a contest then.
Yeah.
From then, I entered the Mr. Universe, and I'm still only 19. And the first time I entered, that would be 1964.
Okay.
And I got fourth.
Okay.
1965, I got second.
Okay.
1966, that's when I won my first one.
Okay.
Arnold came back in 65.
Yeah, okay.
And he came second.
So you got fourth the first time, and then you got second. And then in 1966, you won your class.
Yeah. And then the following 4 years, I won again.
Yeah.
So four times.
Wow, no kidding. So in 1966, that was the year Chet Yorton won the overall. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Who was in your class, John, in the short class?
I don't remember.
You remember? Okay.
No, I don't remember. Those times, the classes range around about 20 competitors.
Yeah. And they would get guys from all over the world, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was the major contest. And it's funny, though, in those days, I mean, there was no, there's no music to your routines.
Right.
And there's no special lighting.
Yeah.
And everything was done, the judging was done in a private hall.
Yeah.
So very few spectators.
Yeah.
To be in there.
Yeah, and it was like you said, it was in...
The show the next year was in a major London theatre.
Okay.
With a major full-time orchestra.
With an orchestra, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, an orchestra and the music.
Yeah.
So everybody forced to the same music.
Yeah, that's funny to hear now. So the whole orchestra would play throughout the whole contest, and that would just be the background music, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, when they did that judging... It, like you said, it was in a hall, so it wasn't in a auditorium.
It was in the hotel.
Okay.
The room in the hotel.
Okay, but the judges were just sitting behind a table, and you guys were right there. You were just right in front of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no special lighting or nothing.
No. That was it. Yeah.
So when did you first meet Arnold? Was that in '66 when he got second place?
It would be 65 when Arnold came in.
Okay.
Was 65. So it was 65. That's when Chet Yorton beat him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 66. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then me, Chet Yorton, and Vern Weaver were the three winners. And we went off to Ireland to do guest spots.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Arnold was left behind. And of course, Arnold, I mean, he created such a... he created such a thing. He was that big. He was only 19-year-old.
Yeah.
And he was huge as a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
And of course, he was earmarked that next time. And he proved right. I mean, the following year, he came in so much improved.
Yeah.
How did a person improve that much as a 19-year-old?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's how it goes.
Did you get to meet him at that show in 1966? Did you get to talk to him?
He couldn't speak English at the time.
Oh, okay.
He learned to speak English. By the next year, he was communicating.
Okay.
And that's when he came up and stayed at my house. We did a couple of guest spots together.
Oh, okay.
And we became friends. And we went down to the local nightclub and got meals out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He was very quick to learn anything. I mean, the year before he couldn't speak English, the year after he's talking.
Yeah.
Really good. Because he was in London that year and lived with Wag Bennett.
Yeah. That's when he met Wag Bennett, and Wag Bennett really helped him with his career, right?
Yeah.
So what was he like? Did you get a chance to talk to him, and did he like tell you what his ambitions were, or was he just?
With Arnold, anywhere you went, everybody's looking at Arnold. I mean, he stands out a mile anyway.
By
this time, he's 20-year-old. Forcefully, he, like the girls, just talking about girls all the time.
Yeah.
Fast cars and girls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he'd approach girls just walking past.
He wasn't shy, huh?
The girls, that's Arnold, yeah. So, it was training girls and cars.
What was it like to work out with them? Did you work out with them at all?
We didn't work out together. No, we didn't get, even when he came to the gym, we didn't actually work out then.
Okay.
So I didn't actually see him work out.
Yeah.
London, when I met him up in London at Wags, because he used to go down regular, then we'd talk and that. But we didn't actually work out together.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So the next year you come back in 1968 and you won your class again, right?
Yeah, well, in 1968, I had to go into the professional contest.
Oh, okay, because you won the amateurs.
I'd won two amateurs in 68. I had to open my own gym. By the time in 67, I opened my own gym. When I got to London, Oscar says to John, look, you're going to have to enter the professional. He says, because you're a professional now, you've opened your own gym.
Oh, okay.
So that means you're a professional.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he says in sport, that's how it is. If you earn money from the sport, you're a professional.
Wow.
He says,
okay.
It goes the same way.
So the only way you could the only way you could be an amateur was like to do another job that has nothing to do with fitness, right? Wow.
So and of course it was Freddie Ortiz was in the contest that year. So he came over. He was going to be the obvious winner. He was one of the sort of superstars of the year. And of course Colombo was in the amateur class.
Okay.
So I would have been up against Colombo, who stayed in the amateur, which was interesting at the time. As it so happens, Arnold arrived and he just wasn't in his best condition that year.
Right. That's when he was big and kind of smooth, right?
Didn't hit it.
Yeah.
And of course, as it turned out, I beat Freddie, which was, you know, was a great win for me. I mean,
I beat Freddie.
But they didn't compare us for the overall. In those days, they never compared the three winners for the overall.
Right.
It just says, right, Arnold won. That's it. So if we got compared that year, because I was in best condition and Arnold wasn't, the result might have been different.
Yeah, you might have beat Arnold,
There it goes.
Was there a story about him drinking whiskey? Did you tell that story before, John? About Arnold drinking whiskey backstage?
A lot of the competitors drank alcohol through the prison at that time. Yeah. So, I mean, I never saw Arnold actually drink any whiskey.
Okay.
But a lot of the competitors used to at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the story I heard was that Freddie was backstage and Arnold went and checked him out. And he was drinking whiskey and Arnold asked him what he was drinking. And then Freddie gave him the whiskey and he drank a little bit. And they said when Arnold went out on stage, you could tell he was kind of drunk. He was like, he wasn't holding his stomach in. And he was like sort of staggering on stage, you know, and then I guess somebody yelled at him from the audience and then he straightened up, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it was as much as that, but Freddie was warming up in a separate dressing room to us. He didn't warm up with us.
Okay.
In the dressing room. So Arnold could have gone in there. I didn't see that part. I just remember when they called us now that we have to go on stage. We walked out. Arnold walked out of my dressing room. Freddie walked out of his dressing room. And I nearly fainted when I saw him. He was that
really?
Big.
Wow.
He was one of the biggest arms I'd ever seen at that time. I just went, what? And so I thought, oh, well, that's that.
Yeah,
he didn't have the legs or symmetry to go with it.
Right.
But, I mean, he was so big. He was the biggest person I've seen at that time.
Wow, no kidding. His arms are legendary, aren't they?
Yeah, they were.
But you just had better overall symmetry. You had a more overall physique.
Even Bill Pearl and Dennis Tenorino, they were watching the judging, and they come up and says, "You've won this match. You're going to win this."
Yeah. Okay.
Meaning you'll be on the team.
Yeah.
That's how it went.
When did you first meet Bill Pearl? Meet him the year before when he won the pros?
At the show. And then at one of his seminars, he called us up on stage and to have a chat with him. You know, we were comparing poundages and bench presses.
No kidding, yeah.
Because I was benching, I'd gone up in nearly a 500-pound bencher.
500-pound bencher, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
I did a 490 at Wag Bennett Show, and I did a 480 at the show in Ireland. Yeah.
Okay. So they would have like kind of exhibitions with powerlifting at the bodybuilding shows, right? So you guys would go out there and lift the weights.
Every guest star had to do some kind of lifting.
Wow, no kidding. Yeah.
So you stand at the time.
Yeah.
We all did. Yeah. My personality was the bench press. Rick Wayne's, his was dumbbell press.
Okay.
Arnold's, curl and deadlift. Curl or deadlift. And Frank was, he was a deadlifter as well.
Yeah.
But everybody used to do, you know, a certain lift. Their favorite.
Did you guys have to do that, or that was just was part of
the show? Well, it was expected. I suppose I was never a part of where you had to do or was expected, and we just did it. What we did, yeah.
Okay, that's wild. Okay, I didn't know that. I mean, I saw videos of Franco deadlifting and stuff or benching, but I didn't know that was all part of the package.
In England it was, yeah.
Okay, that's wild. What was Wag Bennett like? You got a chance to meet him as well?
Oh, yeah. When we were top friends, me and Wag, for years. Great guy. Absolutely great one. What a bodybuilding family, him and Diane. You know, they were a real bodybuilder. Everybody used to stay at their house. You know, they provide accommodation for everybody. I used to stay down there at their house when I was visiting London.
Yeah.
And Arnold lived there. Rick Wayne lived there for a while.
Okay.
Frank Richards, we all used to sort of kip down at that at Wags.
I've seen pictures of Arnold at the table, the family table, eating and stuff. It looked like a good time. It looked like they were really nice people.
Yeah. I think when Arnold says he trained 5 hours a day, I think he was around the gym 5 hours a day. Nobody trains 5 hours a day.
Right. No, nobody trains 5 hours a day, right?
He says he trains 5 hours a day, but there you go.
Yeah.
He'd be in the gym there. He'd be in the house 5 hours, all day long. Yeah.
Right, right.
That's what he did,
So, what did you think of Rick Wayne's physique?
Oh, terrific. I mean, Rick, he was another one. With the arms that was outstanding at the time.
Yeah, incredible arm.
When Rick Wigg came in, I mean, that was around about 1966, 7, he became. And of course, because he was that much bigger than everybody else, they were blaming the steroid thing that it was through steroids that Rick came. And there's a little bit of stigma behind him that, oh, he's a steroid man. And of course, when he went to compete against Paul Winter in the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, Rick was miles ahead, but really? Paul won on symmetry, the same more symmetrical. Okay. But he was nowhere near it, Rick Wade's.
So why did they think Rick was on steroids? Because he was so big?
Yeah. They were blaming the steroids and, with Rick.
Okay.
That's nonsense. He was just terrific.
Yeah.
And of course, we were friends. And Rick came up to my house. We did guest spots together. Do guest spots. But I was surprised when he went back to his hometown and left bodybuilding behind altogether.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah.
So, and I see he's been a bit more coming through on Facebook now.
Yeah, me too. I see him on Facebook too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's okay.
How old is Rick now? Is he in his 80s? 84. He's older than you, right?
He's 84.
84. Wow. Yeah. He looks good. He still looks good.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. What when you talk about the steroids, John, were guys starting to use them back then in the 60s? Is that when they pretty much started?
Yeah, it was around about 66 when it came out in England that the Americans were using these anabolic steroids.
Oh, they thought the Americans were using them first. Yeah. Okay.
So I got a hold of some that were stronger tablets at the time.
Yeah.
And I started taking them. Well, I mean, two a day.
Right.
Two a day of stronger tablets.
Yeah.
The thing was out that steroids was in, you know.
Yeah.
Steroids.
Were guys taking them all the time, or were they just taking them for competitions, or how did they do it?
I don't think really people knew what everybody else was taking. Once the steroids came in, we started using them.
Yeah.
We used them all the time then.
Okay.
And of course, I mean, I used them for years and years, and I never had any after effects or side effects. And so, yeah.
But you're taking pretty...
I mean, bodybuilders will take them all year round.
Yeah, yeah. You were taking kind of small dosages, though, like just 2 tablets a day?
Well, yeah, at the time, and then it grows. But, we were never taking the kind of things that you hear about now.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
An injection. I used to go and get an injection a week or every 2 weeks from a doctor in Newcastle that would give one. And it was a Decadurab, and it was only 50 milligram then.
Okay.
So it was very, very small. And the average tablet we might take was maybe 4 Dianabol or 4 Stronger tablets a day.
Okay.
So there were small dose uses.
Yeah.
And so that's how it was. And then everybody was taking them. Yeah.
So the doctors were okay with giving it out back then, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, this doctor was.
Yeah.
Other doctors weren't. But we found a doctor that was prescribed them for us. So he gave us prescriptions, and we go down to the chemist and pay for them.
Yeah.
The only way you could get them then.
Yeah. But before you ever took them, you were benching 500 pounds, right?
I was, well, it was about that time. Yeah, I'd have been bench pressing certainly up there about 400. So I was, by the time I hit the 500 part, I was around about 19. And so I would probably have been on steroids for about a year then. So It's after that when they came out. Yes, it was. I wouldn't have been on steroids at the time.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, 66. So this was about 64. Yeah.
Now, the IFBB was starting around in the 1960s. Did you ever think about going to New York and competing in the IFBB? Because a lot of guys were doing that.
Well, the IFBB, that came started in 65, wasn't it? Yeah. Yes, when Arnold eventually went to America and started working for Weedy, after a few years, he sent me an invitation for the Olympia.
Oh, okay.
I got a written invitation from him. He says, will you compete in the Mr. Olympia? You must come in your best condition.
Yeah.
And I says, well, yeah, I'd like to. And of course, there was a professional contest coming off in Germany with some top lads, Roy Callender and a few. I was going to enter that. So I decided to enter my first contest there. And I was due to end, but I missed my flight.
Oh, you missed your flight? Oh, no.
I missed my flight. And, of course, I was so disappointed in that. So, as though I chickened out on it, that I hadn't and missed my flight.
Oh, man.
The flight to get back there. And it didn't go down too well.
Well,
I never did, so I never took Arnold up on it, so I didn't go compete. And of course, years later, and I'm talking years later now, within recent years, one of the show exhibitions, Wayne D'Amelio had saw us. I was on the stand at selling our Panada equipment.
Yeah,
and I was on the stand in just a t-shirt and a vest and what have you.
Yeah,
and Wayne D'Amelio come up and says, "How, John?" Because I'd sponsored a few of his contests when he was doing the Grand Prix in England.
Yeah.
I was a sponsor for them.
Oh, okay.
When Dorian won in England, I was a sponsor.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so Wayne came up to me and says, "But you're in terrific condition." He says, "Why don't you come and enter the Olympia? That would the Masters."
Yeah.
So we've tried to get in, and there's no way in into the Masters from England. There was no qualifiers.
Oh.
And he says, "Well," he says, "I'll invite you." He says, "Will you come?" I said, "Yes, I will." So he says, "Well, okay, you've got an invitation." He says, "I'll see the head man in England." Anyway, he says, "So
I'll
see you over the next contest." I said, "Yeah, I'd love to enter." Yeah. And of course, when it came about, our guy, our main head man, and he says, "Look, I can't. You can't go. You cannot go without a qualification." He says, "I can't send Navas top man over the interview without qualifying. I'll have a riot on my hands."
Oh, man.
"I just can't do it." He says, "I says, well, if it can't be done, it can't be done. Doesn't matter."
Yeah.
So I still didn't get it.
Wow. Okay.
So up to that start, up to that time, there was no qualifiers in.
Yeah.
Now it has changed, but now they don't have it anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So this is why I never got into the.
Okay. Wow.
I tried to, but it didn't happen.
Yeah. John, when did you start doing all your strongman stuff on stage? I saw that. I saw videos of that where you're up there and you're bending bars.
Yeah. That went down really well. I just started after one year university. You know, I was just simply a strong person.
Yeah.
So I put this act together, and it turned out we had a trial at one of the nightclubs in our local area. And I says, "Can we come on stage? And I want to do the strongman act." Put this series of lifts together.
Mm-hmm.
With the anvil and anchor, blowing up the water bottle, bending the bar, steel bar with my hands, and bending the bar between my teeth.
Yeah.
And it went down really well. It went down terrific. And then so we were... we got spots all around the country and some of the nightclubs. Doing our strength act.
Wow.
I did it. Oscar asked us to do it on the university stage. And this year it was 71 and 72.
Okay.
So we did it on the university stage. Went down really well.
Wow, that's awesome.
World Championships in Belgium. They asked us. That's when Frank Zane won. And we did our act on the stage there as well in Belgium. Zane won the world championships.
When Zane did, okay.
Yeah. So we had about, I spent about 10 years doing that act, which is why I didn't compete through that time.
From
1969, I pulled out of the competition stage and concentrated on that.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. And I came back in when Oscar announced that he was going to have a Masters Mr. Universe.
He
said, "Would you compete in that if we have one?" I said, "Yeah, we'd do it."
Okay.
Yeah. So the
announcement. And you still had your gym at this time, John? You were still owning your gym?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, how many years did you have your gym?
Well, when I was I had four gyms when I first opened my first gym.
Okay.
In 4 years, I opened one a year, so I had four gyms running at that time.
Okay.
That was in 1966 to about 70.
Okay.
From then on, when I discovered Panatta Equipment, I became agent for them, and I opened another series of gyms then. We had about 16 gyms run at one time.
16? Wow. Yeah. No kidding.
And of course, the business had gone quite large. And then we had about 16 gyms run.
Wow, that's amazing.
And after that, I formed Peakbody Nutrition.
Okay.
But we became agents for Metrics.
Oh, okay.
We were the first Metrics contract. We had the first Metrics contract for England.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. So we were the main agents from Metrics, which I discovered when I was in America. So
now was Peakbody, was that its own nutritional supplements, or were you guys just distributing it?
Still running now.
Okay.
Still running now.
Still running now. Okay.
Yeah. And my son runs it now. I'm back.
Yeah. Wow.
So still running, doing well. Yeah.
So that's why you kind of stopped competing, because you were running so many gyms and you had so much stuff going on.
Yeah. And then when, then around 1980, I competed in the IFBB. I was at a gym in the north there. And of course, Bill, what's his name again?
Bill Pearl?
He was one of the agents for IFBB.
Okay.
And of course, I was training he's given. He said, you're in terrific condition. He said, why don't you enter the English Championships, IFBB? I says, oh, I've never been an IFBB man. He says, well, you should enter. He says, it's coming up in just a few weeks' time. And I says, well, I'm not qualified for it. He says, if I can get you in, will you enter it? And I says, well, yeah. I says, well, I don't know, yeah, if you think so.
Yeah.
So he phoned up Feinstein, who was the main man. He says, look, he says, I've got Johnson calling you. He says, can he enter the English Championships coming up? And he says, well, but he hasn't been around for years. He says, well, I know. He says, but you see, in his terrific condition. And Feinstein says, well, do you think he's good enough? Bill says, good enough. He says, when he goes up stage, that roof is going to go up. He's that good. I was sitting there when he's making the talk. And I'm thinking, God. Ooh. So finally, like, okay, then bring him down. So we went down. So I got ready for it. We went down. And it was a terrific lineup. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, I won.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I won as an ABBA band, winning one of the IFBB shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And, that was one of my best wins, in fact.
Yeah, really, no kidding.
And really, really well.
And how old were you then, John?
I was about 40.
40, okay.
Yeah, I was about 40 then. Yeah.
So when these guys would see you, they always would say, you're in great shape, you're in great shape. So you must have stayed in good shape all the time, right?
I used to. I think, for some reason, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I never blew up. Like
never got bulky or anything.
No.
That's good. Yeah. So when did you go back into the NABBA contest when Oscar started the Masters? What year was that?
That's right. I would have been about 48 then.
48? Okay.
Yeah. So okay. I don't have to qualify. So I started and I entered the Masters, Mr. Northern Britain. That's our local contest.
Mm-hmm.
And I won that. And then through to the Mr. Britain.
Okay.
Which I won that. So then that's qualified. Now then they're having the Miss Universe coming up.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I ended that and I was second the first year.
Okay.
So second in that. When I come back to it, then I won. And I won, well, five times after that.
Five times, wow.
Yeah, and then six times the World Championships. I followed on the World Championships with the Masters Universe each year. For about 10 years, and I won 10 world titles in that time.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah.
Where was the World Championships? Was that in England too?
Oh, no, that used to go around the world.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Spain and Germany. And,
yeah.
You know, so they were in different places.
That was usually after the NABBA Universe?
Pardon?
That was usually after the NABBA Universe?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. All right.
So they were the two contests I ended each year for that period.
So what was your ages then through that? Like 48 to 58, something like that?
No, when I won the World the Masters Universe first time, I was 50.
You were 50?
Then, yeah.
Okay.
And the contests were over 40s. And I competed right till the time I was 63.
63, amazing.
63. When I was in Alicante, I won in Alicante. I was 60, and I still won the over 40s. I still competed in the over 40s.
Wow.
I won 60.
Yeah.
And I won there.
Yeah.
And then the following year, I won in over 50s.
Wow.
Yeah.
So as you got older, John, after 50 and stuff, it really didn't affect you.
That's right. I got to my best condition in my mid-50s.
Really?
By the time I was about 53 or 4, I was in the best condition. Then 55, 56. When I was 56, that's when I won. Then I entered the Wawa World Championships, and I won that one as well.
Hmm.
So I'd won contests in all three major organizations, NABBA, Wawa, and IFBB.
Wow.
National champion in all three.
Yeah.
At the time, I actually competed in 17 Mr. Universe contests.
17.
Probably more than anybody else in the world.
Really? Yeah.
I've got competed 17 times. I won 9. And then I was runner-up a few times. And my worst place was about 4th.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Times.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you find as you got older in your 50s, it was easier to get leaner?
For some reason, you know, when I met up with Arthur Jones, when Arthur Jones brought Sergio Leiva to the universe.
1971.
And he came over and he told us about the thing about genetics. We were saying, how can we develop arms like Sergio? We want arms like Sergio. And he explained that you just can't do it. It just doesn't happen. You've got to be genetically inclined to be able to be that big. It's all within the genes. And a normal person can't develop muscle like that.
Right.
You can develop muscle and get great physiques, but you can't, you've got to be that within your genes.
Right.
That's the first time we've heard about genetics.
Okay.
And understanding.
Yeah.
And of course, he says you only need one set.
Jesus.
And if you can't do it on that, you won't do it on 10.
Yeah.
And of course, we followed him. And for years after I trained, my friend, he brought the first Nautilus machines into Newcastle. I had a restaurant, a cafe restaurant there.
Okay.
And we had a gym above full of Nautilus equipment. And we trained on the Nautilus equipment. And I trained on that for years. And we were following his advice and that, but just getting nowhere with it.
Yeah.
You know, one set of failure and decide and get nowhere. It's when I discovered Metrex, because the Arthur Jones says you don't need a high protein diet, nothing to do with building muscle, just a normal amount of protein. That's what you need. Well, I was following that and just getting nowhere.
Right.
We went back to Metrex. And then went back to normal multiple sets. Then I started to increase.
Oh, okay.
I was doing a lot of I've done a really high protein diet. I was getting down about 6-7 metrics a day.
It
was a major part of my diet.
Yeah.
And it was on a meal at night. So I was living mainly on protein drinks.
Okay.
So I'd gone the other way, multiple sets again, protein drinks. And I just went to the best condition I ever got to.
Wow,
okay. Better than when I was younger. And I was younger then.
I noticed that too. When you were older, you were much more conditioned. You were much more ripped when you were younger.
So I stuck with that. And of course, that's how I stayed now. And so I do multiple sets. And I stay in fairly decent condition now.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I see you, you look good. You look really lean. Yes. Yeah. That's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I wanted to find out your secrets, because you're like, you look good all the time.
So.
Yeah, they say that sometimes.
There again, it's in the genes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said, it's in the genes.
Yeah.
Because people say, well, how would you diet and get like that? And I don't do the diets that a lot of bodybuilders do. All the meals are prepared. They're all set out for the day, for the week.
You don't do
everything counted, all the calories counted.
Yeah.
I've never done that. Really normally.
Yeah.
So,
do you do any kind of a testosterone therapy, John, like they are in the States, the TRT?
Well, I take testosterone. Well,
testosterone.
I take testosterone, yeah.
Yeah.
So, just part of my normal steroid program. Testosterone and steroids. So now is deciding that now that I've been off for a few years now, I'm thinking about doing some testosterone now.
Oh, you've been off for a few years?
I think testosterone is probably a good thing.
A lot of people use it, you know, when you get older. I think it's a beneficial thing. I'm surprised you've been off for a few years. You look really good still without it, you know?
Yeah. So I've always, I mean, I'll dabble in it a bit, but I'll probably do one, you know, every couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, they say, I've heard people say, like, when you get older, your skin gets thinner or you get that harder, grainier look. And it looks like that happened with you for sure, because you got you got so ripped when you were older and you were competing in those master shows, you know?
I mean, there's nothing, you know, it's a funny thing. People say, what we are deciding on what's the best way to train. And, you know, you say, well, Dorian says he trained 4 days a week for 40 minutes and becomes the best physique in the world.
Right.
Arnold says he trains 5 hours a day and becomes the best physique in the world. So who's right?
Right.
One trains 5 hours, one trains 40 minutes, and the both right.
Right. Hey, John, I want to ask you about some of the legends that you met over the years and just your thoughts on them. What did you think of Franco? Did you ever get to know Franco at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, terrific. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific guy. Yeah.
I worked out with him once at Penapas.
Okay.
He was at Penapas one time and I was, and we worked out together one session.
What did you guys train?
Back.
Okay.
We're training back. We're doing rows, low pulley rows. And he said, John, he said, you still don't know how to do low pulley rows after all this time. He pulled it up on his style.
What year was this, John? Was it
when I can't remember now. It could be, that could be 20 years ago.
20 years ago, okay.
Yeah.
So he was already retired then?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Frank Zane? Did you get a chance to meet him when he was winning the NAVI Universe?
Yeah, well, I saw him there. I didn't actually meet up with him. I saw him there, and I saw him at the World Championships.
Okay.
In the guest spot. He was he won then as well.
Yeah.
So those two times I saw him,
What did you think of his physique?
Well, terrific. I mean, but... terrific physique, but I still like to see bigger muscles. You
know? Bigger guys,
But, terrific he was,
Yeah. How about Boyer Coe? Did you get a chance to meet Boyer Coe?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, lovely guy. So when he came to the universe, Boyer and Tenorino and... because I met up with Tenorino and when I got to the States after that, and I was training in the gym, and Tenorino came in and I was doing my dumbbell presses and that, and Tenorino said, have you seen the weights that this guy is lifting? Look at the weights this guy's lifting. I was using the weights then.
Yeah. I heard Dennis was a really nice guy. I never got a chance to meet him.
Yeah. It's funny, he came over, just a few years ago as a minister. So it was advertised, he's at such and such a church as a minister. We went down to see him. And of course, we walked in. And as I was walking in, he was on the pedestal doing some kind of a talk, sermon type thing.
Sure.
And I was walking down the stairs. And he turned around and said, no, he is a guy that's in shape. Because I had a t-shirt on. And then I sat down. He says, it's John Citron. I said, you remember? Yeah, he said, of course. That was after about 30 years.
Wow, 30 years.
And, you know, he died the following year.
Oh, did he? Oh, man.
That was just before he died.
Yeah.
He looked sick. He looked healthy.
Yeah.
He died then. Yeah.
Yeah, I was shocked when he died, too. I thought he died so young, you know.
Yeah.
How about Bill Pearl?
Bill Pearl, terrific guy.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
He's just a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
He came up, the stand was, and again, I was on a Pinata stand, just in a vest and shorts. And Bill came up to us and he said, I feel so proud seeing you look in that condition.
He says,
I feel so proud to see you looking in that condition.
Right, that's awesome. Did you see the contest where he beat Sergio in 71?
I was there. Oh, yes. Yeah.
You were there? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when Sergio walked on, he just goes, what? The size he looked. He was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, because, and of course, it was, again, it was like the Rick Wayne thing. You hadn't seen anybody that big before.
Right.
It was like, when I saw Rick Wayne, you'd never seen anybody that big before in the arms.
Right.
And of course, he walked on. And you just didn't know what to think of him. What that, you know, you were sort of out of it, too big for the year. And then Pearl walks on, perfection. You see, it's absolute perfection.
Yeah.
The most beautiful looking physique you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Gone into his pores and that. Not ripped muscle, not triated, not cut up and that.
Right.
Beautiful shaped muscle. And he deserved to win, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, I was with Sergio after that because we got to Juan Bennett's. And Sergio was at Juan Bennett's at the time, and I got there. And of course, Sergio was there. And he was saying, you know, he says, he was all okay about it. He just says, I just can't understand why this guy beat us. He says, I can't understand it. He says, I'm looking at my back. He says, my back was better than his. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm looking at my arms, and my arms is better than his. He says, so why did he beat us?
Right. But you thought Bill should have beat him, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people did at the time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But then, again, I mean, Sergio was probably, if he had been a little bit leaner, mm-hmm. unbeatable.
Yeah.
You know, he had that smooth look.
Yeah.
Smooth, huge look. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
More way out, you know, more bigger muscles altogether.
Yeah.
Than Bill Pearl, I mean.
Nobody ever saw anything like Sergio back then, right? I mean, when you saw him, yeah.
You just couldn't imagine his size.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he dressed well for the part as well. He had this, he used to wear these tight fitting trousers with the big belt around.
Oh, yeah.
He made his waist look so small and his upper part like that.
Right.
And the slit in the shirt that he wear, and his arms bulging out of it.
Right.
Never seen anything like it.
Right, right.
So I suppose nowadays I've got the biggest hill, but then you know, that's a size that we've never seen before.
Right, right. That's what I hear from everybody who saw him back then. They couldn't believe their eyes when they saw him. Yeah. You know?
Why?
Did you get to know Reg Park at all?
Yes, yeah, Reg. I did a couple of guest spots with Reg as well, and of course there was one of the times where me and Reg was doing the guest spot. I was doing my strand that then.
Okay.
Reg was doing his posing spot. And of course, through my strength act, I would pick up the heaviest person in the audience with my teeth.
Oh, really? Wow.
Teeth deadlift. Of course, we got the heaviest guy, he came up. So we laid him on the platform and we put the anvil, which was an eight-stone anvil, on top of his chest.
Okay.
I'm going to do a special spot here because Reg is watching. So I took them up, picked them up, just pour them up, and the whole thing dragged my teeth out.
No way.
On stage. And I
got teeth came out?
Yeah. And of course, all my teeth were dislodged. And I had to close the curtain.
Oh my God.
I've lost my teeth. I couldn't feel them anymore. I thought they'd all ripped out.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, Reg came up to us and says, let's have a look. And he says, no, your teeth are still there. I'm saying I've lost my teeth. And Reg says, no, they're still there. You're still there. Because I couldn't feel them.
Huh.
And it took me years to come from that. Yeah.
Wow. That was about. So they were still there, but you just couldn't feel them.
Still there, and I couldn't feel them. I thought they were gone.
Yeah. Hmm. So you never did that act again then? You never did that again?
Oh, I did.
You did? You
know, when they recovered a bit, they put a brick, we just went in a brace. And in the brace, they were even stronger. So I could continue the act.
You got a bridge in your mouth then?
Now, yeah.
Okay.
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But when this happened, that was your real teeth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So I lost some years after that. Yeah.
That's crazy, John.
And Red says, Red always says, that's the best strength act we've ever seen.
Yeah.
In recent years, yeah. So, no, Red was a great guy.
So sometimes you would pull people from the audience and you would try to have them lift the anvil, right?
Yeah. We did it all the time, yeah. And nobody ever do. You know, the anvil and anchor that I lift now, nobody has ever lifted those two props.
How much did it weigh?
One, just 100 weight. What you call 100 weight anvil, which is just 50 kilos. It's a 50 kilo anvil with a handle on, and then the anchor, which was just about the same, slightly smaller. And of course, the idea is to lift the boat and get them above your head. It's not the although the total weight is about 200 pounds. It's the danger of those two props. Nobody else could do it. Why I could do it, I don't know. But I could do it. So I had to do it. And I used to do that every day on stage, every night.
Wow.
And of course, we've still got the props. And I still say to people, have a go. And of course, one time, Jeff Capes, he came up to us. He was world's strongest man a couple of times.
Okay.
Big hero in England. Well-known personality.
Okay.
And he came up to us and he says, do you know what, John? He says, the reason I became a strong man, he says, because of you. He says, you'll not know this. I came on your stage once to try and lift your props.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, he says, I came on your stage and I said, did you do it? I knew nobody had done it. And I said, all right, did you do it? He says, no, I lifted the anvil, but I couldn't get them both up. I says, all right, yeah. He says, I was so impressed with your act, I wanted to become a strong man.
Wow, you inspired him.
He was stronger than the world's strongest man twice.
Wow, no kidding. That's unbelievable. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, it's funny. They used to all do that back then. A lot of guys would do the strongman thing.
Yeah.
So, I can't believe you would pull somebody from the audience and have them try it. I mean, I would think
people
would really get hurt, you know?
All right. Well, one person really lost his foot. He got the anvil up, and it came down the point, straight down, straight right under his foot. Broke all his legs.
Oh, my God.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, they would never do that now, John, with the lawsuits and all that, you know.
Yeah, no, they do it. Oh, they do. Yeah,
you still? Yeah.
And of course, when he came back the next day, he says, look, I'm going to have to sue you for it. And of course, when I spoke to the solicitor, he says, you can have a right to time bomb on stage. If they want to have a go, that's up to them. He says, you don't want to worry about it. There's no comeback from you.
Yeah.
They're not forcing anybody to try and do anything.
No, they're volunteering to do it.
So that was that. So
do you ever travel to the Arnold Classic anymore? They got the Arnold Classic coming up next week or the Olympia? No?
No, I did only about 4 years ago. I saw it in Madrid.
Okay.
That was the last time.
Okay.
And then that's the only time, otherwise.
Yeah.
Although last year I was in Alicante, and of course, it came up. It wasn't the Arnold one in Alicante, and I went to see that.
Okay.
So I still go down and see one or two shows. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of the bodybuilding scene today, John? How big the guys are?
I just think. I mean, some of these big Rami and some of these guys are getting criticized, but they've got the most amazing physiques.
Yeah.
Getting criticized for it.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. It's like saying, if the guys have got to get smaller, it's like Grand Prix cars have got to get slower.
I mean, that's right.
This is bodybuilding size is the name of the game. You know, the racing cars can't become slower. The one guy's now to become smaller.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't go backwards now, right?
No. I like to see that kind of size.
Yeah.
It's more, you know, I mean, yeah, of course, Frank Zane's size looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. It all looks fantastic. But it's the same, you know, to me, the big guys look fantastic as well. Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So bring it on for me, but it's not becoming good for the public. you know, they don't, right. It's looking like they're not liking that tire size.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's still bringing new audiences.
Yeah.
The enemy still packed houses and still so popular. So,
yeah. Yeah.
$1,000 prize money, not to be sniffed at. Yeah.
No.
So we'll see how it goes in the next few years. But, you know, you can't turn the clock back.
People yeah. No, it that. Doesn't seem like it. No.
Smaller bodybuilders.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Who are some of the most impressive guys you saw on stage or in the gym, John? Some of the legendary bodybuilders. Who were some of the most impressive? You mentioned Sergio, but were there any other ones?
Oh, I mean, yeah, endless. Yeah, I mean, all of them.
Yeah.
All of the great universe winners, all terrific physiques in their days, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, right up to now, they've just... This huge size that they're attaining now is odd. You know, how are they getting that big now?
Yeah.
There they are. I love to see them even, you know, now, the size they are now.
Yeah.
They're coming on Facebook, and you see some of these guys on Facebook, and they're just going, look at the size of this guy.
I know.
He's not even competing yet.
Right. I know.
He's going, looking towards the Olympia. I've never even heard of them, and they're just huge.
Yeah. A lot of them are having health problems too now, it seems like, you know.
Oh, yeah. But mind, as the spectrum goes, I mean, okay, they're talking about people dying. It's within the pool, as the pool grows, okay, so you're going to get more people dying. Mm-hmm. It's whether, on a percentage point of view, is the deaths higher than they've ever been? I don't know, you know,
from a
percentage point of view. As the percentage, as the pool grows, then you'll get more deaths.
Yeah, that's true.
Whether it's 100% or whatever. See, mm-hmm. I'm not sure now. Yeah.
Yeah.
How, you know, just statistically, is the difference really? Yeah, but of course... I mean, it's not just steroid use. It's all sorts of medications that they're probably taking.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just basic steroids. It's whatever they're on, you know.
Yeah. So you're retired now, John? You and your wife are retired?
Yeah. Okay.
And you spend your time between... you go to Spain a lot, right?
Yeah. I've got two places there. I've got a villa down in Marbella and a seafront apartment in Alicante.
Okay.
So, spend time there now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you're an inspiration to all of us, John. You look fantastic, and it was really a pleasure talking to you about your career in bodybuilding.
Yeah. Really nice to do. Thank you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Yeah. So have a great 79th birthday, and keep inspiring us with all you're doing, man. Because you're amazing to us, you know.
Right. Talk to you again.
Okay, John. Good talking to you. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Take care, buddy. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to John Citroni for taking time to talk with us. And it was a real pleasure to talk to this gentleman from England. He is really a legend in the sport. And he's still going strong. It's 79 years old. What an inspiration. The guy looks fantastic. If you've ever seen him on Facebook, he's always got a tank top on. He's always ripped and tan. Man, the guy looks amazing. Thank you, John, for joining us again. I'm glad I got a chance to interview him. And I want to thank our Patreon sponsors, as I always do. You guys are really helping to support the show. So thank you for contributing. If you are interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, just go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for becoming a Patreon sponsor. You can just choose to invest as little as you want. Up to $5 or more, and it really helps keep the show going, helps pay for my producer, Paul, and all the editing and the time we put into the show. So thank you guys for helping to support the show. All right. So before I let you guys go, I'm going to read this article about John Citroni. This comes, again, from the Legends of the Iron Game history book written by Bill Pearl. This was volume 3. John Citroni, born May 17th, 1943, in Durham, England.
It says John Cetrone is one of the greatest enduring physique athletes of all time. His first bodybuilding contest occurred in 1958 and his last in 2005, a span of 47 years. Although John took layoffs from competition between 1969 and 1991, no one in the sport has competed in top-level competition over such a period of time. John began strength training at age 13 in his home gym over his father's ice cream shop. 4 years later, he won the 1960 Junior Mr. North Britain and was runner-up at the Junior Mr. Britain. In 1961, he won the contest. The following year, Cetrone broke the British junior record in the bench press with 401 pounds at a body weight of 168 pounds. Later, he unofficially bench pressed 490 pounds and squatted 560 pounds at a body weight of 175 pounds. By the mid-1960s, John was the most talked about English bodybuilder since Reg Park. His titles included Mr. Britain and Britain's Most Muscular Man. In 1967, he again won his height class at the NAVA Amateur Mr. Universe contest. And on stage as a guest performer at the 1968 Mr. Britain contest, he bench pressed 488 pounds and he squatted 506 pounds at a body weight of less than 180 pounds. That year and in 1969, John won his height class in the NAVA Professional Mr. Universe contest, but was forced into semi-retirement from competition in 1970 due to financial commitments. Cetrone's interest in competitive weight training was renewed by the birth of the Masters contest. From 1991 to 2005, his dozen or more victories ranged from Masters Mr. Britain to Masters World Champion, with only two defeats, one being at the NAVA Masters Mr. Universe in 1991 and the other in 1996. Malcolm Wyatt, publisher of Health and Strength magazine, recorded, "Cetrone's inspiration was Bill Pearl. His admiration was such that when he, Bill, Reg Park, Steve Reeves, and 14 other physique stars were presented on stage at the 1998 NAVA Mr. Universe contest, the normally very quiet John took the microphone and paid tribute to Pearl." In 2000, Cetrone included a professional strongman act with his bodybuilding exhibitions. His feats included pressing overhead a 110-pound anvil in one hand and a 90-pound ship anchor in the other. Unfortunately, as he attempted to lift a 240-pound man from the floor in a teeth lift through the use of a leather pad connected to a light chain, John, in one horrific pull, lost several teeth. Over the years, John Cetrone has received numerous honorary awards and citations. He was inducted into the Oscar Heidenstam Hall of Fame in 2000. All right. Great article. We talked a lot about some of those things in our interview, including that teeth pull. It's just absolutely crazy. All right, I got one more article for you guys. This is from the July 1989 issue of Flex Magazine, and it's called "The Wisdom of Gaspari." And who was it written by? It doesn't have who it was written by, but it was obviously an interview with Rich Gaspari. It says, "You're known as Mr. Intensity because of the way you train, but what have you learned regarding recovery?" Gaspari: "Recovery for any bodybuilder is individual, but as training is individual. Some people can train on a 6-day straight schedule and avoid burnout, while others feel the need to take a day off while training 2 or 3 days in a row. As for me, it seems I can't train on a 6-day straight regimen, especially for a contest, the way I used to. The reason is, as you indicated, my intensity. I put so much into each workout that following a twice a day, 6 days on, 1 day off routine would burn me out and flatten out my muscles in the process. Some people use a 3-on-1-off pre-contest routine, training the entire body during that period. I use a 4-on-1-off scheme. However, what I do is train the entire body during the first 3 days, and then I begin the cycle again on the 4th day, and then I rest on day 5. The approach staggers my training so that after each rest day, I begin with a different body part. I've used this while training for a show, beginning the process about 7 weeks out. Off-season, I also train 4-on-1-off, but at this time, I'll do the entire body over the 4-day training period. I also train only once a day in the off-season. If I try to train twice a day, I end up overtraining. I might do chest and triceps the first day, back and biceps the next, shoulders and hamstrings on day 3, and then legs on day 4, training calves maybe 2 or 3 times a week, and abdominals on alternate days from calves." Flex Magazine: "Have you modified the training itself to improve your recovery?" Gaspari: "I've been known for my very high intensity training, and at one time I used lots of tri sets, supersets, and descending sets off season. But lots of descending sets seemed to burn me out, so I cut back on them. And now I will not use them when I train two body parts in a row. Also, I no longer do many supersets off season, and I've cut back on my total sets during a workout. During the off season, I used to do 20 to 25 sets with close to 30 sets for pre-contest training. Now, however, I've cut back to about 16 sets off season for my larger body parts and 20 to 22 sets pre-contest, which is still quite high. For arms, I've cut back considerably. I used to do 16 to 18 sets for biceps and 18 to 20 for triceps. Currently, I'm down to about 12 sets for biceps and 13 to 14 for triceps, both off-season and pre-contest. How does one avoid injuries, especially under intensity training? Gaspari. Well, first, you need adequate quality sleep. If you work out while tired, you are susceptible to injuries. Another way to avoid injury is to always warm up before training. Lots of people don't warm up adequately, especially in colder climates. I live in New Jersey. You need to do more stretching before a workout. If you're working chest, for example, warm up with very light dumbbells, doing perhaps full extension flies and very light presses, both incline and flat. You might even do some push-ups to infuse the area with blood while stretching the muscles. Pyramiding the weight in large increments is also very dangerous. For example, going from 135 to 225 to 315 on the incline, even though you think you might be sufficiently warmed up, is unsafe. It's easy to make mistakes, even as a pro, mistakes that can lead to career-shattering injuries. It's essential to begin the workout with exercises that are unrestricted, such as dumbbell presses or free weight barbell presses. Just a couple of weeks ago, I overstretched my pecs slightly doing Smith machine presses. Fortunately, I just had a rest a couple of days, but the situation could have been much more serious. The stretch occurred only in the pectoralis minor beneath the chest, but it made me think much more seriously about warming up even more than I do. Injuries can also occur when something is bothering you and you fail to concentrate on your training. Have you ever had injuries that interrupted your training? Gaspari, only my lower back. The injury had occurred as a result of not concentrating while doing barbell rows and swinging the weight up rather than squeezing it. With any heavy exercises, whether they're presses or squats or bent rows, it's very important to concentrate on your correct form. Bad form and lack of concentration are the causes of injury. How do you go about recovering from an injury? If it's a muscle, the first thing you should do is immediately apply ice to the injury to bring down the inflammation. That's what I did. From there, go directly to a doctor. The key is to first reduce that inflammation because the tight and swollen area can precipitate even more trauma. How about returning to training? Gaspari. Well, for the first week, I didn't push the injured muscle, but rather worked around it. Gradually, I began contracting and extending it without using weight. And then gradually, I added weight, but always using pain or discomfort as a sign not to continue. I do believe that when you have an injury, you should attempt to work the muscle if at all possible. If you don't work it, scar tissue builds and you may lose mobility so that when you finally return to working out, the muscle can be easily re-injured. What's your philosophy on supersetting? Gaspari, well, I superset before a show to shock a muscle and increase its definition and density. However, I don't do antagonistic muscle supersetting such as biceps with triceps. I prefer supersets of the same muscle to work it more in less time. For back, for example, I might do bent barbell rows supersetted with pulldowns, which means supersetting a thickness exercise with a width exercise. Have you ever had any lagging body parts? And if so, what did you do to improve them? Gaspari, because my legs and chest grow rather easily, it was natural for them to become disproportionately larger than my shoulders and back, which led me to really concentrate on the latter two. One method I employed was the muscle priority system, wherein I worked the lagging muscle first, thereby enabling me to hit it with more intensity while I was still fresh. I also shocked the muscle by doing a different routine each time I worked it. In such a situation, concentrating on that muscle while working it is extremely important. This especially applies to the back. The majority of people I see working back don't do the exercises correctly. For something like a barbell row, I see them use way too much weight, which forces them to swing it up. The excessive weight will also prevent them from bringing their elbows far enough to the rear to squeeze the scapula together and work the inner back. They simply won't feel the exercises. I also see many bodybuilders swinging their backs into the pulldowns rather than squeezing the weight down strictly while bringing their elbows rearward. At all times, to avoid injuries, to grow, and to bring up lagging body parts, form is extremely important. And for form, you have to involve your mind with moving the muscle properly. It's also important to experiment with a lagging body part. You first start by doing fewer sets. If you've been lifting for 2 or 3 years, start with 12 or 15 sets for larger body parts and 8 to 10 for smaller ones to see how much progress you're making with fewer sets. If that isn't working, increase your sets, increase your intensity, or change your exercises. Ultimately, it's important to experiment with different training techniques. In my case, I also occasionally did supersets and descending sets to boost lagging body parts. What advice do you have for the intermediate bodybuilder, not only in training, but also in attitude or perspective on life? Gaspari. Well, I hear lots of bodybuilders say early on, I want to be a pro. They might live in the middle of New Jersey and see me in the gym and say to themselves, well, if he can do it, I can do it. But you have to think your life in steps. I've always said that you just can't think you're going to be a pro bodybuilder when you walk into the gym. First, you have to love training, and then you have to take it in increments. For the first show, pick one that's not beyond possibility. It should be a local show, not a regional championship. Experience is necessary, but even though you may look as good as another guy, he'll beat you if he has more experience. He will outpoint you simply because of his style. Judges see style. It's also important that your whole life doesn't become bodybuilding. You don't want to be a gym rat. Have other interests in life so that when you train, it just happens. If you have it in you to be a top-notch bodybuilder, it will manifest itself simply through your love of the sport. But on your way there, have a job and an outside life. That's what makes a bodybuilder interesting, both to others and to himself. If you have the genetics and the attitude to be a champion, you get there one step at a time. How should a bodybuilder make the transition from an intermediate to a competitive mode? Gaspari. Well, as an intermediate, the first thing you want to do is put more muscle on your frame. I would recommend the use of really heavy weights and good quality food, lots of it. Make the food low in fat, but don't limit yourself to a strict diet. At the same time, don't get fat. After all, it's muscle you're after, and you want to see the muscles you're working. Eventually, you should begin refining your diet so to make your body respond quickly without being either shredded or fat. Remember, the goal should always be more muscle. And then watch for weak points. You'll have some as you go. Also, don't overtrain. The only difference between the intermediate and advanced bodybuilder is the training mode. I would start with a 3-on-1-off schedule, training once a day with 12 to 15 sets for large body parts and 8 to 10 for smaller ones. From there, I recommend some experimentation, adding a couple of sets, trying more advanced techniques such as supersetting and descending sets, and playing around with decreasing the time between sets to amp up the intensity level. Your mode of thinking and your mental intensity must then improve. Most of all, you must objectively analyze your physique for symmetry. Don't get carried away with your favorite body parts. Ask someone who's competed what it takes to hone your posing and your body to a respectable competitive entity. And if you're going to diet, give yourself plenty of time, at least 12 weeks. What did you do to avoid becoming a muscle head? Gaspari. Well, I had other interests. I went to college. I read. And I've developed hobbies such as playing around with my Corvette. You have to be serious as a bodybuilder, but when you leave the gym or finish your bodybuilder's meal, there's more to life. I also try to socialize with people other than bodybuilders, doctors, lawyers, businessmen, other non-gym friends, so as to continue expanding my horizon. All right, so that's it. Like I said, I was looking for the contest report from the Arnold Classic, but I couldn't find it, so I gave you the next best thing, which is an article from Rich Gaspari right after he won the Arnold Classic about training intensity. And this was when Rich was at the top of his game, taking second place in Mr. Olympia 3 years in a row, and then winning the Arnold Classic for the first time in 1989. And I think Rich was only about 25 years old, I think, at this time when he won the Arnold Classic. So good article, a lot of emphasis on training. And that's what they used to talk about back in the 80s and 90s. They don't talk about it as much anymore. And of course, we don't have the magazines like we used to either. All right, guys, that's it. I'm headed to the Arnold Classic. If you're out there, try to catch up with me and say hi. If watch me on RX Muscle this weekend on the YouTube and see the reports, and I'll give you the report from my perspective next week on the show. Next week on the show, we've got another 80s bodybuilder, David Hawk, who was the 1985 MPC USA overall champion. He also won the 1985 World Games. And then he went on to spend several years as a professional bodybuilder, competing in the Arnold Classic, the Night of the Champions, and never competed in the Olympia, but got a really good interview with David Hawk. I competed with Dave back in the 1982 Teenage Mr. America contest in Chicago. I was a distant fifth, and he was the winner, of course. So we will talk to Dave next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I hope you guys have a great week. Stay safe out there. Keep working out hard, and we'll see you next week. Take care.